And now, News Talk 1360 WCHL presents Art of Potential, an illuminating talk show about getting educated, getting hired, and getting inspired. Hosted by the staggeringly positive Kristen Heemstra, an experienced human resources manager and college admissions consultant. And now, here's Kristen on WCHL.
Hello, this is Kristen Heemstra, and you are listening to the Art of Potential show. We have a great show in store for you today because we are talking about financial aid. Please welcome David Gelinas. Hello, David.
Hello, Kristen. How are you this afternoon?
I am great, and I am very happy to have you on. The reason that we are talking to David is because he is the director of financial aid at Davidson College, and he has spoken all around the Triangle area about financial aid, and he is, I think you are by far, everybody's first choice to learn about this topic from. So let's start with some basics. What is financial aid, David?
Financial aid is basically are funds that help a student and family pay for a college education. And financial aid can be in the form of money that is given to a student, can be in the form of money that a student needs to work for, or it can be money that is lent to a student. So financial aid can come in the form of grants and scholarships, can come in the form of work, can come in the form of loans.
Okay, so if a student is applying to a school like Davidson or a private school, let's talk about kind of the difference between public and private schools. Are they evaluated the same for the financial aid process, or is there a different means by which they'll be looked at?
It's entirely possible that based upon the schools a student is applying to, they may receive some different evaluations of their information.
Yep, that makes sense.
There are schools that utilize the government's document, which is called the Free Application for Federal Student Aid, or the FAFSA.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only document they use to evaluate a student's eligibility for need-based financial aid. And then there are some schools that utilize a second form called the College Scholarship Services Financial Aid Profile Form. And that is a document which asks some different questions than are asked on the government's form. And by asking those different questions and also using a different type of formula than the government uses, you could see a different outcome. So depending upon the forms the school asks for, and generally speaking, the profile is asked for primarily by private schools, although not entirely.
Okay.
And the free application for federal student aid is asked for pretty much by every school.
It is.
Because they have to use that form to award any federal aid dollars, and in North Carolina, they have to use that form for the awarding of state aid dollars as well.
Oh, excellent. Okay, I didn't know that. The FAFSA form is a form which all families fill out at the end of the student's senior year. Is that correct?
Well, it's an annually completed form. So if a student is looking to go, we'll posit they're currently a high school senior.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going to school in the fall of 2012, they would complete the 2012-13 version of that form. And in completing that 2012-13 version of the form, the data and the outcome would be used specifically for the 2012-13 academic year.
Okay.
Then, as they looked ahead to their sophomore year of 2013-14, they would complete the 2013-14 version of the form. So it's annually completed and annually evaluated. So if families' financial circumstances mm-hmm. change from year to year, that is picked up in the annual filing of the form.
Well, that's a good way to do it. So one question I have that I hear frequently from students is a question about what to call themselves. And this often happens with students who are somehow estranged from their mm-hmm. parents. Because I have, you know, the traditional student whose family's all on board and the parents have agreed to do some type of financial support through the college process. And then you have some whose parents aren't able to financially, or that's just not where the resources are going. And they have a question about how they would be looked at in the FAFSA form. I'll give you a specific example. I have a student who is basically parentless right now, and she's trying to figure out how to go about this process. What would her navigation look like?
Okay. Let me address it from the technically precise side of it.
Okay.
And then maybe flip it a little bit.
Absolutely.
The technically precise side of it would be, does the student have any living biological parents? And if the answer is yes, then the technically correct answer is the student needs to approach or find those living biological parents or parent and have that parent or parents fill the form out.
Okay.
That's the technically correct answer. Now, the potentially, the way this may be potentially handled could be from the standpoint of the student contacting the college or university where they plan to apply for both admission and financial aid, explaining their situation to that school, and then the representatives of that school deciding what they would choose to do in that circumstance,
okay.
Whether they would have the student proceed along the technically correct path or would have them use another path that the school would guide them through.
Okay, so the school then can provide some alternative path if necessary for students in situations like that.
There can be some exceptions made, but they are very specific, and mm-hmm. The school has to be comfortable knowing they're meeting criteria that mm-hmm. fall under the heading of this is an exception to be made. And different schools would have different philosophies yep. as to how they want to approach those kind of situations.
One thing that is often in schools' philosophies or embedded in the literature is the term blind.
Need blind?
Need blind.
Okay.
So tell me what that means and tell me what the opposite of it means and how those two things sway the outcome of admissions.
Sure. Need blind, as you just said, is an admission term. And need blind means that in the context of making decisions about who to admit, there is no consideration given to the financial aid aspect of that student. They're going to admit that student on the basis of, yes, we see the student being able to successfully enroll here, or no, we're not going to admit that student because we don't see them being able to successfully enroll here. But there's no consideration given to whether or not the student might need a lot of money to come or not.
Okay, do schools...
So that's need blind. The flip side of that is need sensitive, where some schools have said, we acknowledge that we don't have the resources to award sufficient aid to all the students who potentially might want to come here. So in some aspect of our admission process, typically some portion of the total class they're looking at, they may make a yes, admit, or no, deny decision using financial factors to assist them in making that decision.
So when a school is evaluating their applicants, they see that and an applicant shows that they need financial aid, the school is then on the hook or somehow responsible for providing some of that aid. Is that what I'm hearing?
Not necessarily. A lot of students say, why do you ask about financial aid on the admission application?
Mm-hmm.
And the real answer is so that if you are interested in our programs, we now know we should be in touch with you. Because that gives us an opportunity to begin to send some preliminary information about what forms we need, when we need them, and how the process is going to proceed. Whereas if we were just waiting to get the initial aid application, be it the FAFSA or the Profile or both, we would be kind of behind the curve in notifying students of what they need to do.
Okay.
So really that question about are you applying for financial aid is not designed to be an in or out screen. It really is designed to be an opportunity to say, let us now talk to you about how we do things and what you should be aware of.
That's good to know. Okay, so the school then, the students' loans then come from a different source than the school themselves. The school may provide, as you mentioned, work opportunities or grant opportunities, but in terms of loans, it sounds like those are often coming from a different location. Is that correct?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
The schools in general use three different sources of funds to assist a student. There are some sources which come from the federal government. In North Carolina, there are some sources which come from the state.
Okay.
And then in some cases, the school has its own resources. And many schools, especially private institutions, are going to be making awards which tend to be a blend of all three of those sources. Mm-hmm. So typically, and you would see grant funds, which could be federal, could be state, could be institutional. You would see work funds, which typically would be either federal or institutional.
Oh, okay.
And you could see loan funds. Some schools have their own loan dollars that they lend.
Okay.
Most schools utilize the federal loan programs that are available. And some schools utilize private non-federal loan programs, which are available as well.
Okay. All right.
So a student could see a potential mix of funds from all of those various sources, depending upon their own individual circumstances.
That is great information. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and then when we come back, I want to continue this and get a little bit more clarity on the grant and loan and just kind of give people some ideas of where they can go to find some money.
Fair enough.
This is Kristen Heemstra, and you are listening to the Art of Potential show. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art of Potential on WCHL. Once again, here's your host, Kristen Heemstra.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra. You are listening to the Art of Potential show, and I am talking with David Gelinas. He is the Director of Financial Aid at Davidson College. So, David, question for you. If a student is looking to get money besides the school, well, actually, let's start with the school and outside the school. Where should they begin looking to get the biggest bang for their buck?
Well, they definitely want to file the FAFSA.
Mm-hmm.
If the school is a school that uses the profile form, they definitely want to file that as well. They want to be sensitive to whatever deadline dates the school uses, because that may very well dictate the ability to more or less fund the student's need as it arises. So that's always important. And then there are a variety of sources outside of the college university itself where a student could potentially apply for assistance. Those tend to be some of those scholarship-granting organizations like civic groups or churches or fraternal organizations, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of things where it's the organization that maybe comes to senior night at a high school and makes awards.
Mm-hmm. Like a Rotary Club.
Right, exactly.
Yep.
So there are those scholarship organizations that are out there, and we encourage students to look into them as well if that's an interest they have, or if they feel like they meet some criteria that might get them considered for those kinds of funds. So it needn't be just at the institution itself. It could be some of those external sources as well.
Okay, so one of the things that I've been working with and talking to students is everybody wants a scholarship. I mean, it's just, you know, who doesn't want a scholarship? Who's going to say
yeah, absolutely.
Money?
The finest form of aid is the gift aid, where the money is given to the student, no question.
And one of the things that I've been telling students as I work with them is that the student that's going to get the most scholarship money is the student that exceeds the institution's standard incoming profile. And I don't know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you have to keep in mind that different schools are going to look at the concept of merit very differently.
Okay.
There are some schools for which merit is very much a question of grades and test scores.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other schools for which merit could be things like various talents. It could be various forms of service a student has performed. So it could even be athletics, because mm-hmm. if you think about it, merit a good athlete is meritorious in athletics.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not always just the grades and test scores. It can very well be other factors that a school may be looking at and saying, gee, we are wanting to encourage visual artists. We are wanting to encourage dancers, or fill in the blank in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, what they may be wanting to encourage as students to enroll. And so in those cases, merit could be a combination of, yes, you show that you could succeed here academically, but you're also bringing this characteristic with you. And that's what we want to really recognize, is that characteristic you're bringing with you.
Now, this all sounds good. I'm just trying to think of examples of this. And I guess most of the kids that I'm working with in this particular area, the Durham-Chapel Hill area, really seem more academically focused. I mean, we have incredible artists and visual artists.
And there may be schools out there who say, gee, we would love to look at you from that standpoint to see if you might qualify for a form of scholarship that recognizes that talent you have.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be very specific from school to school.
That's true. Would you say that Davidson is a school, or some of the high-tier schools like Davidson, what are you all looking for in your scholarship?
Honestly, we're looking for all the things I've just told you about.
Okay, so you want the well-rounded student who's doing all the APs, they're excelling in whatever their extracurricular.
Well, as we tell students, we want you to be challenging yourself with the most rigorous curriculum you can at your school.
Yeah, definitely.
And doing as good as you can in that most rigorous curriculum. But we also recognize that there are other factors in your life that you may be bringing to the picture that we want to also take a look at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yes, I mean, we have art scholarships, we have music scholarships, we have theater scholarships. And so these are students who have shown both academic competence to the extent that they could succeed here academically, but also have shown competence outside the classroom in areas where some of our departments are interested in attracting those students to come here.
So would then a student, if they're trying to get, say, an art scholarship, how would they go about that? Do they apply and then they're contacted about that? Or how do applications
It will be
work?
Different from school to school.
Yep.
I always encourage students to look at the school's websites to see what they show by way of what they offer, and to look at what criteria they're looking for and what process is in place. The general method of being considered for a merit scholarship kind of falls in under three areas.
Okay.
One is maybe you have to be nominated by someone.
Okay.
Maybe you have to apply specifically, and so you just want to see what the criteria is for applying specifically. Or maybe just by applying for admission, you will be recognized in that process. But you'd want to make sure you knew precisely, I'm doing the right thing to be considered for this given fund.
Absolutely. And I'll just give a side example of that. There is the Duke has a scholarship, the Be in Duke Scholars Program, and that is one in which you do need to be nominated.
So, so a student couldn't say, please pick me. You know, they couldn't write to the school directly and say, I want to be considered.
Right.
They'd have to have someone nominate them on their behalf.
Yeah. Which,
and I think that's why it's important for the student to know what are the criteria the school needs to have fulfilled in order for me to be considered. Is it me applying on my own? Is it someone writing on my behalf? You know, what do I have to do?
What is the avenue to get in that door?
Because
there are so many doors with colleges, and to your point, knowing the avenues to get in really help you, because once you get in the financial aid office, you know, you all have the money and you can point people in the right direction. But I do think it gets confusing for people, especially if you're applying to multiple schools.
Exactly. And it's really important for students to be able to keep straight. What is it which school wanted from me?
Yeah.
Because if they're thinking about school A's criteria, but they've got that criteria assigned in their mind to school B, it may not work at all.
And
I always encourage students, to the extent possible, you know, create some type of file, whether it's paper or electronic, that helps you keep which dates and which materials are needed at which school, so you're not blending them all in your head. Because it's easy to do.
Oh, I would imagine. Do you ever get the wrong material sent to your office?
Well, not necessarily the wrong materials, but we get them on dates that we don't quite understand why. And then we discover, that's because the student was thinking of some other school's set of dates.
Right.
And we go, that's great, except if their deadline was after our deadline, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Now, if their deadline was before our deadline, no problem.
But
never let a deadline go by because you've got schools mixed up. That can come back to haunt you.
Well, you would be, I would assume, out of the running because the money's been given away.
You could either be out of the running, or you may discover that you're only eligible for a reduced amount because that's all that's left.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that actually brings up another point. I do find that people who get real anxious about the financial aid process want everything to go in right away, even though, let's say, you have a January 15th deadline. They want everything in by the 1st, thinking that that's going to increase their ability to get money. My thought has been you all look at things on the date they're due, and you wouldn't necessarily give preference to somebody who got their stuff in before the deadline. What's your take on that?
Well, and the fairest answer I could give you is I do know there are some schools which do work on a first-come, first-served basis.
Okay. Is that public
knowledge? And there are other schools, kind of like the example you were using, which is as long as we get it by our deadline, it doesn't matter whether it came in weeks ahead or a day ahead. But there are some schools out there that I think have said we will work with it in the order we get it.
Okay. That's good to know.
So if that's the case, you'd want to be at the front end of that line.
Absolutely.
If you're dealing with a school that says, as long as everything's here by March 1,
mm-hmm.
we don't care if it came on February 1st or February 29th this year, just get it in by March 1, yeah, then you wouldn't have to stress so much about how early you are in line.
But that information would be public, wouldn't it?
It should be this kind of information that's on a school's website. Yeah. So when a student is preparing to apply there, they know, this is how they do it, and these are the dates I need to be sensitive to.
Okay. Well, we're going to take another break, and when we come back, I want to know about Pell Grants and kind of what is that magic formula that will qualify people and how much money will they get. I'm sure you can rattle that off at the top of your head.
Kind of, sort of.
Yeah. This is Kristen Heemstra. I am talking with David Gelinas. We will be right back talking about financial aid for college.
You're listening to Art of Potential on WCHL. Once again, here's your host, Kristen Heemstra.
Hi, this is Kristen Heemstra with the Art of Potential show, and I am talking with David Gelinas, the Director of Financial Aid at Davidson College. And we're going to be talking about how much money you need to make and how much money you'll get for college admissions. Right, David?
Well, I wish it was that simple.
So let's do talk about this, because I do think it is a question many people have. What is the magic number? How much money do you need to make before you qualify for all the gobs of aid that's out there?
I'll flip that a little bit. The most common question I get is, do I make too much to qualify?
Mm-hmm.
And the classic two-word answer I could give is, it depends.
Right.
And so let me go into a little bit of detail about that.
Absolutely.
The way that a financial aid eligibility is calculated is a combination of factors. The first factor we're looking at is what does it cost to go to a given school? Okay?
Okay.
So when you start with that, you know that there are a range of costs at given schools. A Davidson, a Wake Forest, a Duke, schools like that have one cost structure.
Mm-hmm.
A Chapel Hill, a UNC Wilmington, a UNC Charlotte, that's a different cost structure.
Absolutely.
And then your community colleges are even a third cost structure.
Mm-hmm.
And so, first and foremost, depending upon the cost structure you're comparing your ability to pay against, that alone can dictate whether you all qualify for assistance or don't qualify for assistance.
Okay, so somebody who...
That makes sense.
Yeah, somebody who makes a certain amount of money may qualify for assistance if they, say, choose Davidson over UNC Chapel Hill, whereas at UNC Chapel Hill they wouldn't qualify for any money.
The potential is there, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. So that's the first thing you're looking at is, okay, what's the cost of going to a given school? The next thing that's looked at is a much more comprehensive picture of a family's finances than just a single, here's how much I made. Certainly, the income to be reported on the financial aid application is an important factor, but it's not the only factor. Other factors include how large a family are we talking about,
mm-hmm.
how many children will be going to college, what are any assets that are possessed, are they in the name of the parent or in the name of the students. The formula itself makes allowances for living expenses and assets and things of that nature. So all of that gets blended into a formula, and the end result of the formula is what yields this figure that represents the family's capacity to pay for that given student. That capacity to pay for that given student then must be compared to the cost of that given school. And in that comparison of the family's contribution and the school's cost is where you end up with whether there's financial need or not.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's financial need, then it's the question of how is that need met? Is it in the form of grant money, work money, loan money, combination of all three?
Mm-hmm.
That's how it all comes together.
Okay, so can a family then take, how can a family get a hold of this formula? Is the formula dictated school by school? Is this something that's coming out of the federal government to determine what their capacity is and then compare that with the cost of the school?
Mm-hmm. And the answer is yes to both.
Okay, great. That's helpful.
Yeah. If it's a school which utilizes an institutional way of measuring the family's capacity to pay, that's going to be very school-specific. If it's a school that utilizes the federal government's method of measuring a family's capacity to pay, that is going to be very standardized because the government is pretty much standardized.
Mm-hmm.
So what a family could do is that they could go to a given school's website, and on that website, starting the end of last October, we all had to have something called a net price calculator on our website.
Ooh, okay.
And the net price calculator was a governmental initiative that we needed to put that on our website so families could go there, enter their financial data, and get back a working estimate of what their cost would be out of pocket and what the institution's capacity to provide need-based financial aid would be as well. So then the family can get a sense of how the two compare and contrast. How much is us? How much is the schools?
That sounds like a great tool, and I'd just like to mention another thing about this. I was listening to a talk given by the admissions rep from NYU,
And
it was fascinating because I think NYU is somewhere between $50,000 and $60,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And she was saying that a lot of their students are working two jobs. Many are working three jobs. And yet they have an early decision deadline. An early decision means that when you apply, you are saying you will go to the school. So it's a binding decision at that point. And they've had situations where, you know, I guess the first tuition bill hits right when a student graduates. Does that sound right? Somewhere in that summer?
Usually the bill would come out in the early July to early August time frame.
Yep.
And then be due before the student arrives, typically the end of August, first part of September.
Well, what she indicated is that people haven't necessarily had a real realistic sense of how much it's going to cost until that first bill arrives. And then,
well, that can be an eye-opener.
Yeah.
No question. What we try to do, and I can, speaking from my own institution, We try, when we send the financial aid award to a family, is to say to them, here's what we anticipate our costs will be. Here is the aid we're able to offer to you to assist with those costs. And the difference between those two figures are what you will be responsible for as a family. And now begin to plan on how you will meet that portion of the total that is attributed to you.
So this is in addition to, I'm just trying to figure this out from a family's perspective. So the family, let's say that the cost will go with $50,000 a year.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So let's say that your average, the family is expected to meet, what would, well, let's say.
Well, let's use some nice round numbers.
Yes, please.
Okay. Just to make it simple. The cost is $50,000. the family's contribution from the forms they filled out is calculated to be $20,000.
Okay.
That would leave $30,000 worth of need. The school would work toward meeting that $30,000 worth of need, could potentially use all three types of aid to do that. And then the difference between what the school has aided and what it costs to go to that school is what ends up being what the family has to pay. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm just still playing with the number. So if there's a $30,000 need, then the school would come up. What is the likelihood of the school coming up with a... I'm just trying to think how much money the student's going to end
sure.
up with. In
how
debt.
Much? How much might this? How might the school meet that $30,000 in need?
I mean, what's a realistic idea of how much is going to be in work study and how much
sure.
is going to be in?
Sure. It really is going to vary from school to school.
Yeah. Does some of that depend on your endowment, like just the money you all have to get?
Well, from the perspective of how much institutional aid we have to spend, yes, that certainly an endowment. Strength is part of that. That definitely enters into the picture. But I think the other thing is the school's philosophy of how it awards financial aid to a student.
Yeah.
From a standpoint of how much work, I think it's realistic to say that anything up to 15 hours a week is probably realistic in terms of a work study.
Okay. And then how much will that yield in terms of money, though?
Well, then you're looking at how much does the institution pay per hour.
Yeah.
The federal government requires us to pay no less than the federal minimum wage.
Okay.
So that's the least we could be paying a student, and some schools pay more than that. But you're looking at, a work-study component, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at a loan component, potentially, and the federal government and the federal loan programs caps how much a school can offer in loan per year. So that has a ceiling to it.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then in the realm of grant funds, the question would be, does the student qualify for any federal grants? Does the student qualify for any state grants? Does the student qualify for any external grants? And then does the school itself have grant money it might be able to award to them? Mm-hmm. And all that is plays into the final picture of how an total aid award might be constructed on behalf of a student.
Okay. Well, I want to hear more about this. In particular, I want to hear a little bit about the Pell Grants and how you qualify for those.
Okay. The Pell Grant is a strict government formula.
Okay. Can we take a quick break real quick?
Sure.
Okay. So, Anthony, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do my wrap right now, and then we'll get to the Pell Grant piece. You are listening to the Art of Potential show. This is Kristen Heemstra, and I'm talking with David Gelinas.
You're listening to Art of Potential on WCHL. Once again, here's your host, Kristen Heemstra.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra on the Art of Potential show, and I am talking with David Gelinas, Director of Financial Aid at Davidson College. So, David, what are Pell Grants, and why do people want them?
Well, the second part of the two word phrase is why people want them.
Okay.
it is grant money, and it is definitely money granted by the federal government to the recipient. They can use it for their educational costs at almost every school in the country. There are a handful of schools that are not in the Pell Grant program, but really it's literally a handful. And the eligibility for a Pell Grant is determined strictly by a federal formula. So when the family files a FAFSA, regardless of which school they're sending it to, for undergraduate students, they're automatically applying for a Pell Grant at that time.
Wow, okay.
They
so you
do nothing else other than file a FAFSA
okay. And
specify they want the data sent to an eligible school.
Hmm.
And automatically the Pell Grant is determined. The Pell Grant eligibility is determined. The Pell Grant is really for the very lowest end of families on the socioeconomic spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, the maximum family contribution that kept you eligible for a Pell Grant capped out somewhere in the $5,000 to $5,500 range. So if you had a calculated family contribution beyond that, you were not Pell eligible.
Okay. So what would be an I guess you can't really say an income because it depends on the amount of people in the home.
Exactly,
going to
exactly.
College and, you know, if
you could
have
a higher income with a larger family,
right.
But it would take a lower income with a smaller family.
Right. And it is, to your point, though, it's really, like I tell people, this is a grant. Really, if you're living a little bit above the poverty line, you probably won't be all that eligible. But
well,
I don't know if that's
again, you know, if you're living a little bit above the poverty line, but there are six of you,
mm-hmm.
that's a whole lot different than if you're living above the poverty line, but there's only three of you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that all that plays into it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And what the Pell Grant does, it's sort of a foundational grant program. This year, in 2011-12, the maximum Pell Grant anywhere is $5,550.
Okay, so that's the most money anyone can get?
From a Pell Grant.
Okay.
And the minimum Pell Grant this year is $555.
Okay.
And again, that's almost independent of what school you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Which is, okay.
So if a student got a Pell Grant, that's potentially $5,000, roughly. But then the question becomes, what else is there?
Right.
Because $5,000 may not do it at all.
Right. I mean, even for a community college, by the time you figure in all the books, the semester cost,
mm-hmm.
living, housing, and all that kind of stuff.
Right. So now in North Carolina, if you're a North Carolina resident going to a North Carolina school, public or private or community college, you might qualify for some state grant money. That's a possibility as well.
Is there a particular name for the state grants, or is it just
they
kind
are
of a
different
broad
for the various types of schools?
Okay.
And you're probably very familiar with CFNC.org.
Oh yes.
And that's where we refer families to and say, you know, if you're not familiar with what the state of North Carolina offers for North Carolina students going to North Carolina schools, go to CFNC.org.
Mm-hmm.
It's all laid out for you there, and you can see exactly what programs the state administers on behalf of its resident students.
And just for listeners, if you go to Art of Potential's website, I have a link on it to CFNC, College Foundation of North Carolina Universities.
An excellent resource and as comprehensive a treatment of all the state programs as you're going to find.
Mm-hmm. And they have really good career stuff on there, but that's
they
aside.
Do. It's an excellent all-purpose site. It really is.
Right. Okay, so the Pell Grants are just for really, they're kind of the safety net, if you will, for those who are, a lot of these families, I think, are families coming in first-generation college often, not all the time, but really families that just don't have the resources to send anyone to school. Maximum money, it sounds like you can get, is in the $5,000 range,
mm-hmm.
And you're still going to have to make up the rest of the money.
Well, then the question would be, what other resources can the institution bring to bear that would assist with the portion of need not covered by the Pell Grant?
And does an institution dig deeper in its pockets for students they think would be more successful there? Is there kind of a blanket, if you get in, we're going to apply the same formula to everyone?
And boy, that is another one of those great "it depends" questions.
I have a lot of those.
And well, the reason it does is that individual schools have very individual policies and philosophies on how they award the financial aid resources they have available. Some may put more emphasis on merit scholarships. Some may put more emphasis on need-based scholarships. Sometimes it's simply dictated by the reality of we've got X number of dollars to spend,
mm-hmm.
and Y number of students who qualify for those dollars, so how do we divide it up amongst them? So you're going to see a lot of different philosophies depending upon the schools the student's applying to.
All right, now I had somebody send me a question via Twitter.
Okay.
And here it is, and I want to make sure that I ask this correctly. This gentleman has a daughter who's been living on her own for 2 years, working 30 hours per week and taking classes at Wake Tech.
Okay.
His question is this: can she now apply for financial aid on her own without referencing his income?
You already know the two-word answer.
It depends.
And the reason it is that on the free application for federal student aid, there is a section which asks questions of the student, and the questions asked of the student determine whether the student does qualify to apply for financial aid just on his or her own resources, or has to continue to put down parental resources on the form. And the answers to those questions are what dictate who is considered self-supporting for financial aid purposes and who is considered to be dependent for financial aid
purposes. That's what I wondered. So if he's calling her a dependent and she's saying that she is his dependent, it would seem that that would just mean for...
Well, not necessarily, because the questions don't... There are no questions that ask, are you claiming somebody's tax return?
I would think that would be a natural one, but okay.
There are questions related to such things as your age, your marital status, your status as an undergraduate or graduate student, your status as a veteran or current service member. The student would need to look at that section of the FAFSA, see how the questions are worded. They're all yes-no questions, by the way. Mm-hmm. Pretty straightforward. And if the student is eligible to answer any one of those questions yes, then they qualify to fill out that FAFSA just on their own income information.
Oh, okay.
If they answer all of them no, then regardless of other circumstances, if all those questions are no questions, then they would have to put parental data on the form.
Okay. So that's the place to start.
That is the place to go and do it.
All right. Any parting words? Anything else you want to share with our audience about financial aid?
I would say that don't fall for any preconceived notions of, yes, I would get aid or no, I wouldn't. Find out for yourself. We would feel that it's always worth your while to fill out an application, because if you don't, you won't be considered. But if you do, you may discover you qualify for something you weren't otherwise aware of.
Mm-hmm.
The net price calculators, I think, are a very valuable tool to help families see how they might qualify and what they might qualify for at any given school. So worth the while to go there and to look into that. And certainly ask all the questions you have, because the more you know before you get to the process of having to fill the forms out, the more informed you will be when you encounter those situations or those questions where you go, I'm not quite sure, but if you've asked, you know, what about this versus what about that, and you've gotten an answer to it, then you'll know, oh, okay, that's how I need to approach this.
Absolutely. And one other question, I just spoke with somebody who is on the end of, they've had their financial aid and now they have graduated. So 6 months out, now they're having to start to pay back their loans. And she said that recently there was a ruling through the Obama administration where her loans cannot exceed 10% of her salary.
There is an income-based repayment option that is being offered.
Okay.
And what the student would want to do would be get in touch with the loan servicer.
Mm-hmm. Which is Sallie Mae or Direct Loan, she said is another
one. Well, see, the Direct Loan program uses external servicing organizations.
Okay.
And there are different servicers in different parts of the country. So the student would want to get in touch with the servicer and ask about her own capacity to qualify for the income-based repayment options, see what needs to be completed for that, what the criteria are for qualifying, so again, get a feel for, yes, I do qualify for this, or no, I don't fall within those parameters.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. And she did say it was something, like you mentioned, you have to apply for, because otherwise...
Right. It is not the automatic payment situation that a student is put into.
Thank you very much for your time. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Kristen, for giving me the opportunity.
Absolutely. You have just listened to the Art of Potential show on 1360 WCHL.